All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Last Lap podcast, the post-race sort of delve into what happened at the Hungarian Grand Prix. It was one of the races of all time, the Hungarian Grand Prix 2023. I'm joined by some sensational guests. Tom has actually been out there for the Grand Prix, was sat at turn one, so saw all the drama like we did, but from trackside. First of all, Ben, how you doing, bro?
Good, thank you very much. And yeah, I don't know how sure I am about one of the most sensational Grand Prix.
No, one of the Grand
Prix.
It was a Grand Prix that happened in history.
It was a format.
It happened.
No, I'm good, man. Kind of felt a bit flat, didn't it?
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you get them now and again. So like, yeah, that's life.
There were still talking points. There are still some cool talking points that came out of the Grand Prix, but in terms of action itself, it wasn't one that lived up to the mark. Adam, first as well, how are you doing, bro?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I am sensational. Less sensational than the start of the Grand Prix, to be honest with you, bro. But,
sad. Yeah, I mean, it was, like you said, it was a Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
It had some moments where it was like, oh, this could happen, but the majority of it, as we, it's like, 5 out of 10, 6 out of 10, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Sad, because obviously with qualifying that happened, everyone was like, oh my God, we've actually got a race that can live up to what it's meant to be. But it turned out that it was a pretty similar story,
mm-hmm.
other than McLaren's, obviously.
Yeah, facts.
They're actually quite rapid.
Yeah.
Norris specifically, Piastri towards the end, petered out.
Mm.
But similar story, 33, 34 seconds for Verstappen, way up the road, but...
Yeah.
I think
what we'll do today is we're going to try and find ways in which to make Formula One more interesting. I think not more interesting actually, but races like that, mm-hmm. less frequent. Yeah,
this is where content creators come in. We've got to add.
This is what we do.
Exactly,
all right? This is what we're going to have to do. And by the end of today's pod, we're going to have a way in which to do it. I think personally, Devon Butler probably would have added a little bit more spice as well.
Oh, 100%. I mean, Verstappen wouldn't have such dominance if someone like Mr. Butler was up there, you know?
Yeah,
come on now.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I don't know what you're talking about. Pure skill, outpacing.
Absolutely.
Put me in a Tauri. Put Devon in Alpha Tauri. And outclass the field, you know?
100%. Yeah. And finally, JB as well, bro. How are things?
I mean, I'm buzzing.
Yeah,
Lando Norris on
as
the podium.
McLaren,
he takes home points. I'm absolutely fine with that. But I can understand from a neutral perspective, the race maybe petered out a little bit towards the end. If we had like two or three more laps, we'd have maybe seen a few more battles kind of come to fruition.
Yeah.
But it just felt like it ended a little bit abruptly, if anything.
I think we got the inevitability far too early, and then it ended a little bit too soon as well. So we kind of robbed a bit of a battle at the start. I mean, it was a crazy start, for what it's worth. Guan Yu Zhou just deciding driving was overrated.
Yeah, didn't want to start.
Didn't start the race. But that's fine. You know, it's your choice, bro. That's
wants to make
fine.
It more challenging for himself.
Yes.
He shouldn't have done it because he didn't exactly have the pace, but you know.
He ended up at the back. He was. I think he thought about like a one lap down challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, that's maybe one thing that we can do with Max. A one lap down challenge. Maybe that's the...
He's been paying too much time with Hayden Gullis trying to make some good content. Yeah. Last challenge and all that. It's not the way to do it, mate.
Yeah, no, please, come on, man. But and as I mentioned, I think Max Verstappen taking the lead so early on, you know, Lewis getting a poor start, ending up down in four. I think we just ended up robbed really of a battle at the front.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I really expected Lewis to kind of, you know, maybe have, you know, pushed Max a little bit further to the right. But I don't know. Verstappen, you know, straight off the line was pretty decent. And then once the RB19 got into its stride on the straight, it was pretty much, it was a done deal. And then at that point, he almost didn't, like, he didn't run Lewis wide, but he didn't fully, like, full lock, and then that allowed Piastri down on the inside, and then Norris managed to get Lewis as well. So
I mean, it was a rare mistake from Hamilton that made him drop from P1 to P4. You don't often see it. It happens. I would have loved to see him make his car as wide as possible, but that's what we ended up with. Would have loved to have seen more.
I mean, exactly as Niren said, it should have been like basically at least three laps, bro. Like, lead for a few laps and then
give us something a bit more, you know?
Yeah, because don't get it twisted. Like, I'm not going to sit here and go, well, Lewis could have won that race. At the end of the day, the pace that Max had and Red Bull have in hand,
he's always gonna.
It's huge, but I think it would have just been nice to get like a little bit of a battle at the start.
But, you know, let's also give credit to Max. Like, you know, that was the dirty side of the grid. And, you know, to get that kind of start from there was...
He just factually got the better start.
Yeah, like, exactly. He did the job.
Give him the lead.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, tip your hat out to him, even if it's, you know, like, pretty obvious at this point, like, he's performing at such an exceptional level. Yeah, sometimes you just got to say... Better man won.
You got to hold your hands up and say, what did he do?
Yeah, better car won. I mean, yes, Verstappen is incredible, don't get me wrong, but stick quite a lot of those drivers in a car that is that dominant, they'd still probably win. But yeah, obviously, Max is currently in a form greater than anything he's been in before.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is annoying for the general spectator who wants to see an interesting race, but you know, it is what it is.
At the front, I mean, we've got some battling at sort of in... Not in the midfield, but sort of between third and 10th, which was at least nice to see. Sergio Perez obviously fighting back through the order. Yeah. I did say that like the bare minimum really for Sergio in a Red Bull is podium. Mm-hmm. Did manage to get it, to be fair to him. Driver of the day, fantasy F1 points, sorted.
Lovely.
What do we make of this? As a recovery drive from Sergio, is it going to maybe ease a tiny bit of the pressure that he's been under? You know, obviously the free practice crash was not great, but at least recovering to grab a podium, it's his best recovery drive probably the season from a poor qualifying. So
I think it does. I think, you know, he's at that point in the season now where he is under pressure. Lots of talk about Daniel Ricciardo coming in, and like the first thing he does this weekend is smash into the side. Like, it's like, okay,
with new upgrades on the car as well, just completely obliterated.
The fact that he has been able to like redeem it, have a podium finish, pick up some solid points for himself. Like, I think, you know, we look at the constructor standings and Red Bull are miles ahead, but that's because Max Verstappen is winning the constructors championship on his own at this point. So like Sergio Perez does need to show that he is gonna finish second in the driver's standings. Yeah. Like, that is the goal, right? There's nowhere near he's getting near Verstappen, but if he can finish second in the driver's standings, at least Red Bull can be like, that is the best that he could have done, even if like he did have a poor sort of middle stint to the season. He's at least finished second in the championship.
I mean, sure, but next year, Red Bull aren't certain they're going to have as dominant a car. This season, they really need to pin down two drivers, Max and someone else, who are actually going to be able to fight with each other. Well, not obviously fighting with each other, but similar sort of pace to each other, that's a better way of putting it, to be able to secure maximum points against all the other constructors, because I bet next year we're going to have a bit more of a closer grid. At least I'm really hoping for they're going to have to either get Perez to a level and to a standard that they're happy with, or again rope in Ricciardo.
Because can you imagine, like, you know, looking at the driver lineup, you have Lewis and Russell, which is probably the strongest driver pairing on the grid. And then you have
arguably
Charles and Carlos. Imagine those cars were capable of challenging the Red Bull. Mm. Perez would, you know, he would be a problem.
Yeah.
Red Bull, so.
This is actually this is a really interesting debate I always have with Tomo, because he's a very sort of like, you need a number one driver and a number two driver, because then you don't have the inter-team politics and, you know, a lot of the problems out on track. You know, we saw the Alpines today. It wasn't really their fault, but we've seen them clash. Yep. We've seen... Mm. You know, and Lewis and Nico were up against each other. If there'd actually been another competent car in that season, Mercedes might not have even won the Constructors' Championship with the amount of times that, you know, Lewis and Nico were coming together. So I always do understand that that viewpoint, but it then gets problematic when you have got that that competition from other teams, because if Sergio isn't there, you know, a qualifying run that he's just had, if Ferrari were the Ferrari of the start of last season... Red Bull aren't leading the Constructors' Championship anymore. Do you know what I mean? No, but I mean as in like Ferrari from the start of last season.
Yeah.
Obviously, I know they beat it off.
Yeah.
The team that's actually capable of winning races, that's a massive problem if Sergio's finishing fifth, sixth, seventh, fifth again.
I completely agree that like when we see those dominance eras, usually you do see a number one driver and a number two driver, but it's that number two driver has to be within a certain range of your top driver, you know? Like if you think of Valtteri Bottas, he always finished with around like 60 to 70% of the points that Hamilton did, and he was always like right up there.
Yeah.
Whereas Sergio Perez has now gone through this stint this season where it's been interchangeable who's in front of him, which has actually kind of done him a bit of a favor. Like if it had just been Fernando Alonso from the start of the season to now, and if Fernando had 11 podiums and Sergio Perez is struggling to get podium after podium, then you're like, okay, so surely they should just look at like someone like Fernando and just bring him in like to be that driver, or someone like Lewis and like bring him in. Obviously that's impossible to do in reality, but is Sergio Perez the best of that bunch with Red Bull? Because you're looking at their other options. Yuki Tsunoda is still a bit of an unknown. Like they brought in Nyck de Vries to try and push Yuki Tsunoda on, and we don't really know if he pushed Yuki Tsunoda on because Nyck de Vries wasn't good enough.
Did he even push himself on?
Exactly. Yeah. And then we've only seen one race from Daniel Ricciardo at this point, and it was a race where he got smashed into the back of by Zhou Guanyu at turn one. So we didn't really see the pace that Daniel Ricciardo had. All right, he did really well to finish in 13th. Would he have finished higher? What could he have really got at that AlphaTauri? We don't really know right now. Mm-hmm. And then it's like beyond that in the Red Bull Academy, it's looking at those Formula 2 guys, and it's like, again, they're not like, they're not winning Formula 2 by a long distance. You know, you look at those drivers that come through into Formula 1 and are like straight away good enough, like your Norris's, your Russell's, your Leclerc's.
The Astries and they, stuff like that.
Yeah, they won Formula 2 and they won it fairly easily.
Yeah.
Like, or at least they were battling with drivers of that similar level. You know, you look at George Russell winning Formula 2, Lando Norris was just behind.
Yeah, like, who else was in that championship? Albon was in there as well.
Mm. Yeah. So you're looking at like that level of driver. I just think Red Bull right now, the problem that they've got going into 2024, Sergio Perez is still contracted. Mm. And I don't think there's an obvious choice to go into that second seat for them.
Yeah.
Contracts in Formula One, they mean nothing, honestly. Well, just tear them up whenever.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And what you said there, you mentioned in a hypothetical, putting Alonso in the Red Bull. That would be sick, wouldn't it?
That would be sick. Alonso v Max would be
the egos wouldn't be able to be contained within the helmet.
I would need a documentary immediately. Just on them, on Red Bull. Drive to Survive, that's fine, but I need All or Nothing Red Bull as well.
Yeah,
on top of that.
Oh yeah,
that would be insane. And I guess it does lead on to where Red Bull could possibly go. Who are our potential choices for if, you know, Sergio Perez doesn't buck his ideas up, if Red Bull are a little bit under threat next season and they do feel like they need to move him on? Mm-hmm. Who is your obvious choice?
It's got to be Ricciardo, isn't it? Mm. I mean, one race, sure, he beat Tsunoda on this instance. There was a lot of things happening. Like you said, he had a little bit of a shunt. We don't know how much damage he had to the rear of the car. Did he even change his front wing? Did his front wing get damaged?
I don't know. Because like the rear.
It was just the rear. Because I wasn't sure if he went into Alpine if that did anything.
Yeah.
I don't know. One rake might have been. I don't know. I mean, he beat Tsunoda on his first outing. Tsunoda's had a whole season to get used to that car.
Exactly.
You know, it's one of those ones where maybe you can say the strategy was a bit better and that wasn't just down to Ricciardo, blah, blah, blah. Fact of the matter is, he beat him on his first outing.
And in qualifying.
It's looking good for Ricciardo. Looking good for the Honey Badger.
Yeah, I mean, Red Bull have set up this situation in which, you know, they basically pitch the two against each other. So it's basically like, you know, right, Ricciardo, do your thing. Checo, do your thing. Checo's qualifying wasn't, you know, great, but he kind of made up for it in the race. I think ideally, you know, for him to really be in like Marco's good books, it should have been second. But Norris had really, really good pace in the McLaren. So, you know, let's see how it plays out for the next couple of races. After the summer break as well, you know, Checo could end up and like turn the whole season around and put up a championship fight. We don't know, but
he's not that type of character.
Yeah, I get
it. It's good to dream.
Yeah.
You need some more street tracks, mate. That's all we need. Or Singapore. Yeah. No, he's not usually good at Singapore, though, is he?
He's all right. But the problem is, as like you say, street tracks, I think we're in the like a Verstappen-heavy section of the calendar. When I think of Max Verstappen, like even Max Verstappen, Elton, when he first came through like into Formula One, like you think of the tracks that suited him best, it was like almost you're like, old style tracks. Exactly. Your Silverstones, your Hungaries, your Spas, like those tracks just seem to suit him. When it comes to like Monaco or Azerbaijan, like he just doesn't seem to be quite of the level in those tracks. Like he doesn't underperform.
Yeah.
But like maybe there's just like that 2% that really takes Max Verstappen to that next level. He just seems to suit those kind of more traditional tracks a little bit better.
Yeah, I definitely say there's a bigger performance gap between him and his teammate at the tracks you mentioned, and even like Spa, Zandvoort. But realistically right now, I don't see a single track where he won't win. No. Just, you know, based on the fact that I just don't see any weaknesses. Whether it's him with Red Bull, with, you know, and when I say Red Bull, I'm talking about like the strategists, mechanics, obviously the engineers who designed the car, and
it's just unfair. Like even the pit stops today, 1.9. How do you even do that? How do you even do that? The car even stopped yet.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Although we did, talking about pit stops though, there was Alonso had a slow pit stop. Did you see what the cause was? Alonso spun the back tires while it was off the ground.
Oh really?
Yeah, that was dangerous. I couldn't hear the team radio or what they were saying, but by the looks of things, it got raised and he might have like dabbed it just a little bit and he went zoop. Oh. And the mechanics were like, whoa.
Got a bit eager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no one got injured, which is good.
Yeah.
It was a weird day for pit stops. Now you mentioned them in Hungary. Like it felt like at the beginning of the race, no one could remember how to do one.
Oh, wait, hang on.
They got a second go at it. They got a second pit stop. We know this one. I remember that.
It's
the heat stroke. Genuinely.
Especially that McLaren guy who was like prepared.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Prepared. He might be my favorite man just right ever. Now, ever. Like the way he was just ready.
I would love to scour Twitter to see how many memes we made of that. It's quality.
Oh man. Well, like you say, I think an interesting day for Sergio, just in terms of, you know, and obviously Max dominating. Interesting day for Red Bull. They've got questions to ask. Really, do we consider it a successful first race for Daniel Ricciardo?
Oh yeah. Well,
definitely.
What people were expecting of him was to be able to be close to Tsunoda. They knew he had it in his locker to eventually beat him, but for now, to be a success for him, it was to be close, on level, but he beat him by how many places? 3-4?
Tsunoda was 16th in the end.
Yeah. There you are, 3 places. Yeah. Bosh, job done.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looks right back at it, right? You're thinking, you know, you think back to the McLaren days and it was, what, Spain, I want to say, last year, where he outperformed Norris with Norris not having any real issues. Mm. Comes straight in, first race, outperforms Tsunoda, outperforms in the race. Like, he just looks fresh. Like he needed those 5 or 6 races or the 10 races off this season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And where, you know, he even said himself, he doesn't want to just take a seat for the sake of it, which then also makes you feel like, okay, he said no to Haas. He said no to Alpine. He's got to have something. Like Helmut Marko's maybe said something, or Christian Horner's maybe said something.
There's a little carrot dangling.
Yeah, because he's not coming back into the worst car on the grid in terms of the constructor standings for no reason. You know what I mean? He doesn't need to go into that car.
No, exactly.
But he's come in and done really well.
Yeah. 100%.
I agree. I think, like you said, if there was always going to be contract offers available for Daniel, because not only just the driving ability that he has, but everything else about Daniel Ricciardo, you know, that
marketability,
literally. I was about to say, just that aspect alone is so helpful for a smaller team. You know, like
it's so helpful for a smaller team.
it really is. But it's great to see Daniel back on the track, and it's great to see him, you know, doing well. And it's also great to see his former team actually here, like, to stay. McLaren might actually be back, lads. This is great news for me and you. I'm not gonna lie.
I thought you were gonna mention Alpine then, and I was like, did you watch the same race?
No.
We'll get to them in a second, left back
in the garage.
they're already home.
McLaren, absolutely phenomenal. The step up that it seems to have taken. Unreal. Like, we know that they came into the season, and before the season even started, it was mad that like Andrea Stella was like, oh, you're the new team principal, you enjoying it? He was like, the car's nowhere near where I want it to be.
You need that drive, and obviously it's paid off.
I remember at the start of the season when everyone was talking about like, oh, Norris needs to find a new team and stuff like that. He needs to look for Ferrari or whatever, or Mercedes even, and you know, it's just like hindsight is 2020. Or hindsight is a beautiful thing. Just, you know, now he's like doing so well, 2 seconds in a row now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, McLaren are looking really good. I think I was looking at some data like last week when I was researching for a video. And yeah, McLaren have gained almost like a second worth of lap time and race pace.
Nice.
Just through that Austria upgrade.
Yeah.
You know, relative to Red Bull, they've basically just launched themselves into the top three battle with, well, top three behind Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari and Aston Martin. And we talk about Aston Martin and Ferrari and Mercedes and say like, oh, they kind of fell off, but McLaren have basically just aced it.
Yeah. McLaren just filled that gap, really.
Yeah.
There was
yeah.
always a big gap between Red Bull and Mercedes and Ferrari and obviously Aston Martin as well. Aston Martin propelled themselves up the grid, but there was still a big gap up to then Red Bull. McLaren have just kind of slotted themselves in there.
Yeah.
Well, it's what Fernando Alonso said. Like he said after qualifying in Hungary, they're still the same distance off Red Bull they were at the start of the season. Mm. It's just that distance was a podium 10 races ago.
Yeah.
And now everyone else has taken those steps forward. Like Ferrari do look quicker. Mercedes do look quicker. McLaren have then also just made a huge jump. Man, that looks so much quicker as well.
Yeah.
Just filled that space, as you say, like between Red Bull and Aston Martin, there was a gap there and it's now being filled up by those cars.
Yeah, by the team.
To the point where Stroll and Alonso finished 9th and 10th today, where Fernando Alonso was like, yeah, we'll get a podium every single race.
But, he really should not have said that.
He shouldn't have said
it's
that.
It's gone so badly wrong since
Road then. Of De Vries.
I was going to say, they both, well, De Vries obviously shot himself in the foot numerous times, but he came in saying, yeah, I'm going to do bits.
Yeah.
And now Alonso's sort of done the same thing. But I mean, maybe they've got something hidden that they're going to come out with.
Yeah.
A couple of races. You never know.
I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. They were talking big about upgrades like a couple of races ago. But to be honest, from what I've seen, I can't really see any indication that they're going to, do anything big anytime soon.
It's a shame though, because I was really enjoying
Alonso
being up there and being a dad to Lance Stroll for like no reason, like just being like a new surrogate father. It was really good. But hopefully we will see a little bit of an upgrade in performance from Aston Martin, because they're just kind of like, you know, they're just there, but it's not like, you know.
There's still more to come from Aston Martin, though, I feel. Like, their factory is only just finished.
Yeah.
And in a similar vein to McLaren, actually. Like, McLaren have just finished their wind tunnel. They've just changed around their backroom staff. They've still got Sanchez to come from Ferrari next year. Like, there's a lot going on behind the scenes at those two, where I feel like Red Bull and Mercedes are maybe a little bit more stable at this point. And Ferrari are just like an up in the air. Like, you don't really ever know what's going on at Ferrari.
Is the correct term to use there?
Like, if you look at Red Bull, it's like Christian Horner, Adrian Newey, Max Verstappen, they're just going to be there. Like, that is just Red Bull now, isn't it? Like, those three in particular, like kind of the face of
although Newey, again, this morning, I was reading an article saying he was like, yeah, I'm getting towards retirement now, which again, probably might have every other team celebrating. Yeah. But I don't know, he didn't put an age on it, he didn't put a time on it, but it's getting there. You never know.
I mean, he's like 64 or something.
I have no idea.
He's been designing cars since like before all of us were born.
5 years old.
Yeah.
since
he came out of the womb. Yeah. But yeah, you know, Newey for me, because like I really enjoy, like I really appreciate like great engineering. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's obviously the best of all time in that sense.
Worth more than most of the drivers, if not all the drivers, to be honest.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, any team he's gone to, like that team has been a front runner, or if not the best car on the grid.
Yeah.
If you have the ability to go to any team and just make them the best car on the grid, you are the most valuable asset of anyone in Formula One.
100%.
Yeah. And exactly. And you know, he does create, you know, these dominant periods in history. Obviously, Mercedes had their time, but in terms of you know, have a good aero, like there's no one to beat him. And so, 100%. Yeah, it's kind of like, mate, you know, can you just like take a day off something? Like something to...
Well, he did retire. Well, he did have like a sabbatical, didn't he? He went off.
He did, yeah. To
boats and stuff.
Well, it was building the Valkyrie.
Must have been a quick boat.
Yeah, I was going to...
Yeah.
You don't even have to row it.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, yeah, I think... What topic were we on?
We were talking about McLaren, which went on a tangent. Yeah. McLaren, you know.
But it's just the fact that like the McLaren team have that factory coming. And the Aston Martin team have that factory coming. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Red Bull, you'd say like they're also in a bit of a transitional period, but they've got Honda leaving and they've got Adrian Newey leaving. Yeah. Whereas like it feels like maybe the other teams are bringing people in. It's sort of... And Mercedes also, they've got James Vowles leaving. Well, like,
it's what Aston Martin have been doing. That's why they've been so good, is because they've just nabbed quite a few people from Red Bull in terms of like, you know, engineers and stuff. So yeah, you're right. I think it'll be this cool convergence. Obviously we've had, you know, the wind tunnel time as well, and obviously the cost cap too. I know we were talking about how dull we thought the race was, but it is actually really cool to see the actual lap times just come into it. I said the accordion thing earlier on.
Yeah, that was good.
I like that. But it's, you know, just bringing the rest of the field together. I mean, it was like, what? It was a second between everyone in Austria. I think it was pretty similar here. It was like 9.5 tenths or something.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that, you know, we've got this variety almost of teams that are performing, and the closeness as well.
Yeah. Also got to realise as well, I know what you're saying about obviously it being so close within a second. Mm-hmm. The lap times around it it's not the longest, but yeah, even still, absolutely.
Yeah.
Lovely accordion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would love that.
I also think in terms of qualifying, that's the case. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a big convergence, and it's easy to see because it's immediate. You know, this is like everyone at their very, very best, but it's very hard to simulate race data. Well, you can take the lap times, but in context, it's like you don't know if the person has traffic on that lap. You don't know if they, you know, were harvesting whatever for some reason, or they had reliability issues. And so you never really know the true pace in a race, which is where I feel the Red Bull is just on a different planet.
Because then when it gets to the race, it just off into the deep.
Exactly. And so in that sense, today kind of indicated that upgrade that they brought, as they've taken an even further step forward and basically just embarrassed everybody. So they did. I mean, like,
if you take Red Bull out of the equation, the other nine teams do feel incredibly close. Like there's no backmarker team.
Exactly.
Like that.
There is no midfield. It's just the field. Like, everyone's in it. Like,
yeah, that's true. I mean, like I was saying before, when I'm watching most of these races nowadays, I look from P2 down. I don't see the point in looking any above. It's always going to be Max.
Yeah.
You know, it would be nice. Obviously, everyone wants him to be challenged, but it's not happening anytime soon. After the summer break, can you see it happening? I don't know. For maybe 4 or 5 races, maybe after that, it might be a bit of a challenge, but there still needs to be quite a big development, even from the likes of McLaren and Mercedes. And we'll see. We'll see. I'm hoping so.
Yeah, I think,
for the sake of the sport, it kind of needs it.
It would be good just to have those battles at the front.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I agree, Tom always says this, it's like a race can't be like more than an 8 out of 10 if there wasn't like a battle for the lead.
Yep.
If it was great everywhere else, it was raining, there was shenanigans going on in the midfield, you got a crazy battle for like fifth, calm. But if someone's winning by like 30 seconds, then it's just like...
Whilst coasting.
Yes, whilst one hand on the wheel, enough with a coffee cup, just like...
You
know what I'm saying? Like, you know, it's... There's not much. But one person that we haven't actually talked about that was in P2, that was at least best of the rest today for a little while, Oscar Piastri. I know Lando's going to get the plaudits, and that's quite right in the sense that Lando did finish second in the end. Piastri did drop off towards the end. But I've genuinely been really impressed with him in the first half of this season so far. Matching Lando, who we've all considered to be probably the best driver in the midfield about 3 years now. Season one, spent a year out, a lot of pressure after the Alpine's fiasco.
Yeah.
He's actually been very good in terms of pace, in my opinion.
No, 100%. Piastri's put on a right shift today. Like, as you said, he was in P2 for quite a while. Mm. I can't remember exactly how many laps, someone will correct me.
Like Lando just undercut him, innit?
Yeah.
So he would have, you know, kept hold.
No, exactly. Yeah. But then towards the end, it kind of shows maybe his inexperience or something along those lines, but it was tyres or something or other. He started to drop back and Norris pretty much kept it consistent. So maybe there is still a bit more of a learning curve for him to go there. But he's definitely shown real promise that eventually he will be up there. Whether he'll be championship contender in the future, yet to be decided. I've not made up my mind yet, but he's definitely going to be up there fighting for more higher positions if he has a car under him, for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely already come in and done what Ricciardo couldn't do, which is match or even be as close to Norris as possible. So if Norris is third, he's fourth. If Norris is second, he's third. And you know, today, I don't know what happened in that last stint. He kind of just dropped back.
Yeah.
Lewis caught him quite easily. And then I think he ended up like 20 seconds back after that.
With 10 laps to go.
Yeah.
That one final stint.
Just, yeah.
Which was weird because he'd been on the mediums already in the race. And he was fine.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it was on like 7 laps-ish older tyres than Hamilton. And Hamilton was able to like breeze past him.
Yeah.
Even Leclerc was like 2 seconds off him by the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ferrari had been like nowhere already.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's weird for Piastri. Like, as you say, he comes in with a weird aura around him. Like, he's not a rookie that comes in without any pressure. Like, sometimes a rookie, a bit like Logan Sargeant comes in this year.
Sorry, I just slipped out.
Nick De Vries wasn't a rookie. Yeah. In his own words.
It was very clear that he didn't want to be seen as a rookie.
But, like, if you correspond it to Logan Sargeant, say, who's also another rookie that's come in this season, there's no pressure on Logan Sargeant. Like, he was a Williams driver beforehand. He's come through the Williams system. He's come free from F2. He didn't win F2 or anything like that, but he's just come into that Williams seat and there's no real pressure.
Yeah. Just Oscar, be American.
Yeah.
You know,
Oscar Piastri like took his career into his own hands, which I absolutely love. Like Alpine were like, we can maybe get you a Williams seat. And he was like, nah. I'm just going to leave then, and did, and then was announced as an Alpine driver and was also like, nah, don't fancy it.
Funniest day. Might have been the funniest F1 Twitter day ever.
Literally, so that then puts an incredible amount of pressure on him. And the fact that he'd won Formula 2 and the fact that he was coming in to replace Daniel Ricciardo. Like, Daniel Ricciardo, even though he was struggling at McLaren, is still an 8-time Grand Prix winner, is someone who is established on the Formula 1 grid. And the fact that he's overcome all of that is really, really impressive. Mm. All right, he's not quite there yet. He's not like obliterating Lando Norris.
Yeah.
Like, if he'd have come in, he was beating Lando, we'd all be like, wow, what on earth is this
team? Going on?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He's at least, as you said, like touching him. He's finishing just behind Lando pretty much every single Grand Prix.
He's just that guy.
Like that guy.
He can just choose where he wants to go and then like, you know, go and perform wherever he wants. And so, I'm looking forward to seeing how he progresses, especially over like next season, because this season, nowadays in general, rookies don't get a lot of time to develop. Well, they don't get a lot of time to test preseason. And then, you know, that obviously it doesn't really help when they're trying to make progress at the start, and you know, everyone's onto them like, oh, why are these guys not performing? It's like, well, because you haven't given them enough time to do so.
So I'm
really excited to see what he can do against Lando.
And he also missed out on that Alpine test in
he
time
did.
As well
because
the antics of the
they
track
put him in jail.
He just disappeared off the face of the earth for about 6 months.
There was like a picture of he was at like Abu Dhabi for like the final Grand Prix of the season last year.
Yeah.
And he posted a picture and it genuinely looked like, I think there was like bars on the window. genuinely was like fearful for his like safety. It's like blink twice.
Yeah, if you're okay.
Nice man. But yeah, no, he's done well. I think the obviously he was very unlucky, I think, at the start of the season. I remember the Saudi Arabian race where McLaren actually looked all right, and then Lando got damage, and that damage then flew into Piastri and damaged his car. I was like, guys, just wrap it up. But then since the car's actually, you know, been a bit more drivable, and obviously, again, he's had two chances to score good points and be good in qualifying. And at Silverstone, boom, one place behind Lando. That's really the max you can expect.
Yeah.
Here, one place behind Lando. Obviously, was right behind Lando for most of the race, and it just fell apart at the end. But, you know. Yeah, it's impressive.
He'll get there. He'll get that consistency eventually, but just needs to take a few notes from Norris for a minute. Yeah.
It's a good teammate to have as well.
Mate. Oh, 100%. Yeah. Right, thinking about it, compare the Norris and Piastri matchup with the Hamilton and Bottas matchup.
Yeah.
Pretty similar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Right. It's like overall ability, yeah.
Yeah, ability and like how far, like percentage-wise, like pace comparison. I reckon Piastri needs has a bit more to go before reaching Bottas's level, but if they were to keep that driver pairing and get the car up there, then that could be really, really good for next year when they go for constructors and drivers.
I think it's going to be really important for McLaren that they do keep that performance, because that is such a young, high ceiling driver lineup.
Yeah.
That if you don't deliver the car, they will just go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It depends.
I know Lando has been associated to McLaren for ages, but like if Red Bull came knocking and McLaren were sixth in the Constructors' Championship.
Oh yeah, I take it.
There's only one decision to make.
Yeah.
I think the thing with Oscar is like he's in that period now where he can really kick on, and it's like, yeah. Does he become, as you say, like a Bottas or like an Ocon? I also feel like sits in that category, like really good midfield driver, or does he go into the like Leclerc category? Does he go into like the Russell category? Like that driver that if you feel like was in the right team in the right car could actually win a championship. And like this is the point where like over the rest of this season, and I feel like a second season is where you really start to see that. Like when we started to see George Russell in a Williams start to qualify consistently well.
Yeah.
Or when we saw
you should not have been doing
that. Yeah, absolutely.
Or like that first season with Charles Leclerc where he was in the Alfa Romeo and just outperforming it and then came into the Ferrari and was also outperforming Sebastian Vettel. Yeah. It's like, okay, you've really kicked on now and you've put yourself in that like upper category. Yeah. And then there's like the proper top level. Like, does he get to Hamilton, Verstappen level? We'll have to wait and see. Like you can never really predict that up until a point. Like they're just phenomenal. They're just like of a different category on their own.
Where would you guys rate Norris right now on the current grid?
I think he's in there with Leclerc and Russell for me.
Leclerc and Russell.
Like if he was in, feel like if he was in the Mercedes car, he'd do as well, if not better than Russell right now.
Yeah. I think, in terms of the overall 20, I'd say top four.
Yeah, solid. No, yeah.
I think he's Champions League. I'm not going to lie.
I don't think you can put him above Verstappen or Hamilton.
No.
But he's eventually, maybe, but for the minute, no.
But that is like it. And then I guess if you want to say Alonso, but obviously it's just hard to judge Fernando because of Stroll, in my opinion.
And
Fernando
car,
is always
just
an elite driver, obviously. Yeah. But pinpointing it right now in comparison to like the rest of the grid is always a little bit tough because you don't quite know the actual borders of that Aston.
And I think if you think about Lando as well, he's been in a McLaren car that's been tricky to drive.
Yeah.
And like he was the only midfield car to get a podium last year. Like he was the only guy outside of the top three teams to pick up a podium.
Yeah.
And like he's been right on the fringe. Like you think about Monza. All right, Daniel Ricciardo won that race, but he was right there behind him.
Yeah.
Russia, had it not rained, he would have won that Grand Prix. Like he's pushing the upper limits of that McLaren car pretty much all the time.
Yeah. I don't think there's ever really a Grand Prix weekend you look at Lando's performance and go, I could have done a bit more, mate.
Unless it's like, you know, something happens to him. But generally, he's like, you know, it's a clean race and he's just good, then he's always or consistently up there. Mm. And then amongst, you know, as much as the car will allow him.
Allow.
And even today, like managed to hold off Perez. Again, two P2s in a row. That's no mean feat. I think the only other drivers to do that are Lewis and Fernando.
What, this season?
Like
this season.
Multiple P2s.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's actually a point. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Esteemed company.
Esteemed.
But what about... So it's weird because we've given a lot of praise there to McLaren. Fair enough. That's fine. Ferrari, we're probably going to look at and go, oh, man, bare average, whatever. But they're 2 seconds off Piastri by the end of the race. What do we make of Ferrari's existence this weekend?
Bit boring, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, they had a... we wouldn't say that as well if there was a massive strategy cock-up.
Yeah.
It would make it more interesting, but it wouldn't be good for team performance or team morale. But they were just there. I didn't really have any real coverage. Nothing really happened with them. Their tyre degradation was okay. They were just there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A stinky bit stop for Leclerc.
Speeding in a pit lane.
Then he complained. He complained.
Yeah.
They didn't let him through. He got annoyed. There's this weird... Well, it's not weird. I completely understand it because I would have lost my mind if I was driving for Ferrari by now. But there's this interesting tension that I'm really starting to see. And it's not between Sainz and Leclerc. There's not beef there. It's just overarching frustration.
Yeah.
No, Silverstone... Sort of, I think did Sainz overtake Leclerc on the warm-up lap for his like final lap? And it was like, Leclerc was like, nice. Or I can't remember, vice versa, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Leclerc was like, safe, good overtake, loved that. And they were just like getting really sarcastic at each other. But I think it's just overall frustration at Ferrari.
Yeah, it's partly to do with the management of both drivers because, you know, Mercedes have two, you know, elite drivers driving for them and they've not really had... Maybe like, you know, now and again, like a small, you know, radio message like, you know, I got screwed up here. But yeah, no, generally, you know, it's been pretty seamless. Mm. And with Ferrari, it's, you know, like, as you said, it's at this point, it's never even, you know, a surprise anymore when you hear stuff like, I don't need to say anything more. Or, you know, you just hear the drivers get frustrated about, you know, they're put on split strategies. And then when one driver isn't allowed to, you know, make the most out of their strategy, and then it's just like, there's too much to, you know, really like pick at.
Yeah.
But, you know,
they don't have a strategy.
Frustrating.
I honestly don't think they have a strategy department. I genuinely think like engineers.
Who do you think writes like A through F strategies every week? They're always swapping around.
Was it last weekend? Always forgotten as well. Like, yeah, what is that one?
Plan B again? Yeah, yeah. Guys, come on.
I think you hit the nail on the head though. For me, it's like it's a communication thing at Ferrari.
Yeah.
It, there seems to be no real harmony between everybody. Like, it just seems like the team and the drivers are all slightly fragmented from each other.
Yeah.
And there's not quite the coherence between them yet. Maybe that comes. Obviously, it's Fred Vasseur's first year with the team, and like, he's still settling in. Maybe he can get that going. Like, he's worked with both drivers before. He really wanted Carlos Sainz back in the day. He obviously worked with Charles Leclerc at Alfa Romeo. So like, he has a relationship with those two.
Yeah.
But I just think the whole cohesiveness of the team, it just always feels like Leclerc is complaining about something. Sainz is complaining about something different. And it's like, okay, do we do what Leclerc says? Or do we do what Sainz says? And they don't really decide on either.
Yeah.
And then nobody's happy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they have the building blocks there, obviously, to be able to make a car that's the cream of the crop, top of the table sort of thing. But like you said, they just need to iron out those creases, whether it be half is speaking in Italian, half is speaking in English, I don't know. But it just needs to be a cohesive unit, and that falls on the shoulders of those in charge. That's it. It falls on the leader, which he's going in the right direction. You know, give it time. Maybe, I don't know, I'm saying it again for the other teams, like next year. It should be now.
It should be now,
but give it after the summer break. There might be a bit more of a cohesive plan.
How long does he get though, for sir? That's the other thing.
I think he's making progress as it is though.
But that's the one thing I worry about with Ferrari a lot of the time, is the way that they are happy to chop and change at the top.
Yeah.
Like they are willing to get rid of a senior member of their staff and like swap them around fairly
every
happily.
Every 2 years, doesn't it?
Exactly. It's like the Red Bull element with their drivers. Ferrari do it at a team principle.
I think having Christian Horner as that like cohesive message, and having Toto Wolff as a cohesive message, is different to swapping a driver.
Like, yeah, 100%.
Like the driver, you know, like the driver, you can get into the team and like the rest of the team obviously comes together and helps them as much as they possibly can. But when you've got like a Toto Wolff, he just feels like, and similar actually to James Vowles this season, really impressed with James Vowles going into Williams. He just feels like he's organized everything well. And like the driver can't do that. Like you can have the best driver in the world. You could put Max Verstappen in a Williams right now. He's not going to be able to make that difference.
Yeah.
I think taking James Vowles and putting him at the top of Williams has made a huge difference.
I think it's like a bigger impact, like you said, because it's the umbrella of things that you do as a team principal. You know, the way your priorities, the way you lead a team. If you're someone who works at Ferrari, you've had probably about four different management changes, if you like, in like about 8 years. How are you ever going to get like a cohesive direction, if you like, team, you know, because everyone's taking it a different way, a different path.
So on that point that you made, would you say that drivers are a product of the system?
Yeah.
So let's say put Verstappen in the Ferrari right now.
I think Verstappen
is he the same level?
I think Verstappen still outperforms both Leclerc and Sainz if he's in that Ferrari right now. But I think his frustration with the team, like you hear, I don't know, the dynamic between Verstappen and Christian Horner seems like really good. Like sometimes you see Max Verstappen, like a couple of races ago, they were like, Max, don't come in. We don't want to go for fastest lap. We don't want to risk it. And he did it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, but he knows he can kind of get away with that. Whereas I feel like Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz, they're sometimes a little bit hesitant on the radio. They don't really know whether they're allowed to say this or that. And like, they don't have that like cohesion between them at this moment in time. And it's similar to like, I think Renault or like Alpine are a similar one, where again, like every season we say, oh, like Alpine and Renault are really going to kick on this year, but they change up who's in charge. And they never quite seem to make that step forward where Aston Martin have. Where Aston Martin's a bit of a different one, where it seems like the team principal is not really the linchpin. It's been slightly higher up in Lawrence Stroll has kind of been that guy who's then put in place that system. But I think you do need to have that one cohesive person at the top who puts everything else in place. You see it in loads of different sports, right? We talk about Man United and that era with Alex Ferguson. He put everything in place. Arsene Wenger at Arsenal, like Pep Guardiola now at Man City. Everything goes through them, is channeled through them. And I feel like with the driver, you can have the best driver in the world, but if you haven't got a cohesive team that is working for one singular goal, it just doesn't quite work.
It's
just interesting as well, because like Ferrari, the proper big Ferrari management always intervene as well. They love like dipping a hand in and just like
micromanagement never works.
Yeah.
It's very annoying.
Yeah.
Not saying it from experience at all.
What are you talking about?
No, it's just, there's no point. Just let it play out. Let the person who's meant to be in charge, because you never know. It could have been a long-term strategy. There's nothing worse than a leader coming in and having like all these short-term ideas. Short-termism is the end of companies. Because at the end of the day, these are companies, they're teams, but they're also backed by companies. And you need to have that direction to be able to point them in the right direction. Well, right place for... Sorry, that's my foot. Not my just letting you know. Put on a cable. But yeah, you need to have that direction. You need to have that strong person in charge, which if you change it every now and again, it's not going to be that person, you know?
Yeah. Facts. So Ferrari, just please stop sacking people. That is the moral of the story. If you could just keep your staff together.
I think they're going to keep him for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're liking where it's going. Binotto maybe stayed on a bit too long, to be honest. And I've just gone on a rant saying stop changing. But now that someone in charge seems to know what they're doing and has got a proven track record at Alpha, as you were saying, you never know.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think it felt like quite a long-term direction move. Because Fred's what he's worked with, I think he founded ART, didn't he, in F2. And then he's worked for Sauber for quite a while, and he's just a bit of a project man, so it gives sort of the vibe of that. But yeah, we'll be hoping that Ferrari can obviously kick on for the actual enjoyment of the sport as well. And this is where we're gonna go next, because I want ideas for how we can ensure that every race, or as many races as possible, or at least a 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Now, my first proposition is to bring back Nicholas Latifi.
Oh, yes.
Ooh. Even if it's just his own, if it's Latifi GP Motorsport Enterprises, just on its own, doesn't even have to be any other driver in the team. But today's race was just lacking that one perfectly timed safety car from one Canadian individual slapping in a tyre barrier safely. And that's what needs, you know? That's what we need. Abu Dhabi 2021 would not have happened without Nicholas Latifi.
I was going to say,
but better, like, all for worse.
Lewis Hamilton disagrees.
You know?
Well, okay, now I'm not going into that one.
You just opened a whole can of worms, bro.
Yeah, that would be a long conversation. Quite passionate conversation as well. But it is what it is. Your voice is going.
It is.
Yeah, no, 100%. Get Latifi in, get that perfectly timed safety car. That would have messed up so many strategies and made it so much more entertaining for us. You never know. Verstappen might have actually been pushed by Norris to the line.
Yeah.
That would have been sick.
That would have been good.
Unfortunately not.
We needed that. I think we actually overlooked the importance of Latifi when he was actually in the sport. I think we really did.
The entertainment factor. Yeah, 100%.
To this day, I'm convinced that he was like, allegedly, was paid by the FIA to some degree for entertainment purposes. It has to be the reason. I genuinely think that having a driver who is, at the end of the day, still a very good driver, you have to be to get to Formula 1.
Of course,
but has that tendency to just do something mental.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past Michael Massey to try and orchestrate something like that. I'm refraining.
Why would you say that?
It wasn't even like necessarily during the races. I feel like Latifi was just great entertainment value. The fact that he went the wrong way at Japan.
And then blamed his car.
And you're like, you are one of the top 20 drivers seemingly one of the top 20 drivers in the world. You've had all week to learn this track. And you've got no idea where you're going.
Oh, the car just turned right. I don't know what happened.
I didn't have the racing line on. Sorry, guys.
The weird thing is, I thought he topped that session as well. Like, it was so random.
He talked to Hungary. It was raining and he just went out and just blitzed it. Oh my God, this guy.
Goatee.
He's arrived. But yeah, that's personally my idea. He's bringing back Latifi. I don't know what the rest of you guys are thinking.
It's so difficult to say what will make the sport great, because to be honest, that I feel like the FIA are trialing so many different things. Mm-hmm. Like, say, for example, the qualifying with the hard, medium, soft. Yeah, it was interesting, sure. I don't know if that's the way and direction we need to be going down, because as I was saying to you earlier, like, that the whole idea of that was to try and make it a bit more entertaining, but also to try and make sure we have rather than 13 sets of tyres, go down to 11 sets of tyres we're taking to every GP to be able to reduce the carbon footprint of the sport.
Yeah.
I don't see why they can't just keep the format exactly how it was, but just reduce the tyre usage to 11 sets for the whole weekend anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that will still mix up the grid a little bit. That will still make the strategists think a bit harder as to what they're going to do. But as to where I think what we should do to make the sport more entertaining, that's such a massive question.
Mm.
It's give it more time. Maybe it's going to be more entertaining because McLaren and everyone are making more steps towards it. Maybe just, I don't know, give a fine to Red Bull for the sake of it, you know, be a time fine, stop development. You're staying still. Everyone else, come on, you know, I don't know.
But for what it's worth, the future of F1 is definitely bright in terms of, like, you know, you've got, as we said, we've got that convergence of teams.
100%.
You've got the accordion.
The accordion.
Isn't it good old me?
I just love it. It's really,
you've got that accordion effect, like, of all the teams converging together. And that is going to make things more unpredictable. Mm. You are going to get teams eventually catch up with Red Bull because of the cost cap and because of the wind tunnel time and stuff. To be honest, I'm just thinking of something more gimmicky. I'm like, just sprinklers, fuck it.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying the gimmicks a little bit, like you say, with the sprint races and sprint weekends. Yeah. Like, I feel like they're just throwing that in now. They're like, oh, that's just a little bit like shorter race on a Saturday. Yeah, why not? Just throw that on. Yeah. Like, see if we can fill more of the weekend with competitive sessions. In terms of like actual on-track stuff, though, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's tyres at the minute. Mm. The tyres at the beginning of the season just seemed to last way too long. Mm-hmm. Like, you had people doing one-stop strategies where they were stopping on lap one or two of the Grand Prix and just going to the
last thing.
Like, mental.
In Hungary, at least we started to see a little bit of a change around. Like, we had Carlos Sainz starting on the softs, did really well at the beginning, then dropped off a little bit. Mm. A few people on the mediums, a few people on the hards. Like, I feel like at the minute, that's the one thing that they have real control over, because you can't just be like, smash the front wing off the Red Bull.
Or like, I mean, it can.
Okay, yeah. It can, and it has been done in the past.
I'm just saying, take away Newey's pen and paper. Like, that's it.
Take away
his drawing board.
Take
everything.
He does everything by sketchbook, doesn't he? It's not even computer.
Crazy.
Which is brilliant, old school, love it, but mad.
Just remove senior members of staff from the team.
Just let everyone go wild.
Oh, actually, I'll tell you what, you could do like an NFL draft of like senior members of team. So like Williams, like bottom of the constructor standings, they're like, yeah, we'll have Adrian Newey, cheers.
Oh.
And then like Alfa Romeo are like, all right, we'll have Toto Wolff like in the team.
That would be sensational.
That would be pretty sick, yeah.
I need that.
I can't see that ever happening, but that's
absolutely
sick.
No. That's not what we're here for. We're not here for realism. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. We can't afford to pay Asian
Yui. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, that is needed, actually. Okay. NFL draft, I'm going to write that down. Sprinklers, I'll write that down.
Yeah.
Latifi, write that one down.
Go Latifi, got to love it.
Mick Schumacher as well, actually, again, along the same lines as Latifi. Because he just breaks cars in half for like limited reasons.
For fun.
Just it's an enjoyment factor.
Yeah, he costs a lot of money.
Yeah, that is crazy, isn't it? That's why Mercedes are hiring. It's just like, well, we've got money, it's fine, don't worry.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you want to bring it occasionally, it's okay.
Yeah.
he did well in the Silverstone test. Like, obviously not well enough,
because
Daniel Ricciardo got a seat off the back of his Silverstone test.
Yeah, but he was already in a Red Bull family though. Yeah,
it would have been interesting if they were like, actually, George, we're going to put Mick in.
Yeah. He just tested,
sorry, George.
Yeah, he just tested really well. His mentality was great. That's what I would love to see personally.
Well, maybe that's the thing where, like, for a certain number of races every season, you have to put your third driver in. just for a race.
I have always been someone that campaigned for a team principles race.
Yes.
One race in a season, Toto Wolff v Christian Horner.
They used to race, didn't they?
A lot of them used to race anyway. Yeah. Toto Wolff used to be a Red Bull driver, which I always find a bit like ironic. But I need, it's like the parents race at sports day, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Zach Brown. Oh, make it happen.
Would he fit? Right, see you guys later.
That's all for today's last lap. Thank you very much for watching. No, I'm kidding. That's personally what I think we need. But I don't know if it's unfortunately the Hungarian Grand Prix was not a classic. So I don't know if there's any other points that we can.
Made the cars smaller.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I said that at the beginning.
Make the cars smaller. Some of these tracks are so thin that it just doesn't allow for any overtaking, you know? Say, for example, Monaco. It was a lot easier to overtake back in the day. Nowadays, ain't got a chance in hell. The car's as wide as the track is. So make the cars smaller. FIA, please. Yes.
RC cars.
That's Formula E, you know?
No,
I love it. I'm just saying because they're electric. I'm not knocking it.
Throwing
shade at the end of the
podcast. No, I do agree because I remember seeing a comparison between like a car from, I think it was like 2017 and a car from like 2002. And genuinely, it's like having an iPhone and an iPad next to each other. And it's like, well, how it's like a truck trying to get around, you know, the hairpin at Monaco. So no, I do agree with that. Yeah, 100%.
They're trying to make it easier to follow and stuff, but the rake and stuff won't be as bad. The dirty air won't be as bad if the car's smaller.
Mm, yeah.
Obviously, keep the current specs for the cars in terms of how they're designed and the ground effects and all that stuff. Just
shrink them.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah, make them lighter.
Bosh, job done.
Down. Sorted.
It'll cost a lot, though.
Yeah.
But money doesn't seem to be an issue for F1 at the minute.
Yeah, well, each car will be less to build. Technically, it's smaller. There's less car to make.
Absolutely. That's how it works.
It's less paper for Adrian Newey because it's a smaller thing.
Less paint.
Yeah,
less materials. Yeah.
Less ink, less whatever. Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, especially like with weight and everything. Do you think everyone's just going to go like when Mercedes came up with a black livery this year?
Yeah.
You're going to have completely black cars.
Yeah.
You're going to have a black version of the red.
Actually, that's another thing I just realized. Aesthetically, we can make Formula One better by just getting more colors onto the grid. I'm fed up of seeing dark blue cars all the time. Everywhere. So I need like
I would like the silver McLaren to come back as a silver McLaren, not just an orange and silver McLaren.
They just put chrome where the chrome word was and called it a day, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Bit of Ted Cruz.
Ted Cruz.
Yeah. Terry Cruz was on the TV as well. Get more celebrities involved. I actually want to talk to Martin Brundle as well. That'd be nice.
That's a whole other story.
It is. The fallout from that has been hilarious. But yeah, I think that's where we're going to wrap things up then for today's pod, for the Hungarian Grand Prix. Not a classic of a Grand Prix, but it's provided some hope and faith, I think, for future races, you know, with the likes of McLaren getting themselves up there and seeming like they're going to stay. But thank you, lads. Thank you very much for hopping on for the show and
been a pleasure
for the podcast as well. Guys, where can the people at home find you?
BMPH on YouTube. Documentaries and in-season content. Yeah, check me out on YouTube.
Sensational, Adam.
Good stuff. Instagram at Adam Sanderson, Adam_Sanderson, and Twitch, same user as well. And you can also find me in the Breaking Point story mode.
He be there on your computer screens.
And not applicable F1 everywhere and anywhere, all over the place. YouTube particularly would be great, but
please drop him a sub and us as well. If you're watching on YouTube, feel free to like and subscribe. Always massively appreciated. And if you're listening on Spotify, give us a 5-star rating or whichever audio platform will be great. We'll be back for the Belgian Grand Prix. Tomo will have returned back from his lovely holiday in Hungary. He can tell us how sensational the race was from actual trackside. But until then, we will see you later. Adios.